New Life Church, every year we speak about vision. We have to. God has given us a vision as a church, and you want to know about it. But what you do not know is recently I got in front of a camera and I started talking about the vision of New Life Church and things that have happened. And I just want to say to you, it got weird for me, awkward for me, because I don't cry much, and something happened in that moment that's awkward for me to talk about, because I broke. I was in a home that reminded me of when we started, and I had a flood of these thoughts and emotions, and so I lost it. And I thought all of that footage was ruined because of it, because personally, I don't even like to hang out with pastors who cry. I mean, every now and then everybody's gonna get hit, but my friends, that's not their demeanor, like crying. And I don't like to be around it much. And then now I'm in this moment and it felt extremely awkward. And so I thought all of that was ruined. But my staff, they have convinced me, even though I might still be slightly reluctant, but they have convinced me I need to show it to you anyway. So I had them edit out the worst parts. You're not even gonna see the worst parts because it's just too much, man. But we're still gonna show it. Why are we doing this? I really don't know, except for you to know, sometimes when you see all that God does for you, it's just overwhelming. It's like the Bible says, He's gonna do more than you can imagine or you can handle, that He's gonna pour out a blessing so much so on you that you can't contain it. That's what He's done at New Life Church. I love you all, so. Here it goes. Let's take a look. Hey, New Life Church. I thought it would be a good idea for us to talk about vision. And recently I was talking to some friends and I said, you know, we've never shot a video in the original room where my family lived during the first year of moving here. It's where we met with the launch team. It's where we met with people who were new to our church or wanted to think about coming to our church. In fact, we had never even had one church service yet. This is the first time I've been in this room in 17 years. I took my family here and we're all looking around, just remembering the enormity of all that God has done through the years. Right here in this room, it started with just a handful of friends who are still my friends now. And we started dreaming about what could we do? What could happen? And let me be clear, I never knew all that would take place. We had a dream, but it wasn't as big as it is now. But interesting enough, the same things that we talked about in the living room here is still happening where you are now. In fact, our church is still being built in living rooms. We were in this room when we heard about September the 11th. My family was just talking about the tears there. It was in this room that one of my kids tried to witness to the other kid, and she said, no, I'm not ready for that yet. We talked about so many things that happened in this room. I remember putting together sermons and putting together vision, and I remember being scared in this room, in this house. But I also remember a lot of great stories. What we did is we told a few people, here's our phone number and we're gonna start a church on February the 4th. And people started calling us. It was strange how God stirred up the hearts of people in the city to call us. And they would call my phone and then we would say, you wanna come over for some cookies? We actually had coffee and dessert with over 200 people in 1 month's span of time. I remember when they would knock on the door, my kids would run down to answer the door. And I would hear this voice of somebody I didn't even know. And they would walk in, and as they were walking up the stairs behind me, I remember wondering if they came to our church, would we hurt them? You know, would we pastor well? If they decided to choose our church, would it be a mistake? So then we would meet them and we would share our heart with them and our vision. And I remember right away, it just seemed like it was important to a lot of people to have these values, that it wasn't something that was obscure or something they wanted to resist. Right away, I could tell that a lot of people were dreaming about the same type church. That was encouraging. Then we would pray together, and then every time they said, "We're gonna go to this church, you're gonna be our pastor." It wasn't me, it was just, they longed for values that Christ talked about 2,000 years ago. It's really not that complicated. So looking back on those years, being in this room, I don't know, it's doing something to me. When I visit a different campus, they're doing the same things we talked about in this room. And I'm proud of you all. I'm somewhat surprised. Because if I would have known that we would have grown the way we've grown, I would have predicted that maybe we would have lost some of those original discussions. And we haven't. I'm sure we've hurt some people. We've certainly lost some really good believers here and there. Some have moved away, some fell away from the Lord, and some found a better church. So many have just stayed around through the years, and some of you are brand new, and you still are attracted to the same things that these families who just walked up those stairs hungry for. So I didn't expect to get emotional today, but maybe it's important that we all remember. And I just want to ask all of you to remember the vision, but please don't forget about the values. Through the years, I've seen this coming together, and I don't know how long I'll be able to pastor here. And I'm 57, but I know that I just enjoy attending this church. So I'm still leading, and you have a pastor who leads your campus, and we're all leading. But I tell you, we're just thankful to be a part of it. I'm thankful I haven't messed it up. Like, I always think I'm gonna mess this up. And I'm sure you have too. If you lead a small group, are you gonna mess it up? If you run sound, are you gonna mess it up? It's just a lot of responsibility to saying, "Yes, Lord, I'll go." So if you're new to New Life Church, we just want to let you know that we want to hand this to the next generation as well. And then one day we're going to ask for you to hand it to someone else. If you're a greeter at a door, we have to make sure that we allow other people to greet around us. If you're a praying person, you have to teach others to pray with you. I'm a pastor, I had to teach other people to pastor. I love preaching and leading, but I had to raise up other people to do it. And now we have people that can do it way better than me. And I love watching that. And I just want to thank you for it. We're just getting started. We have 17 campuses in Arkansas, and then our vision is 50. And I'm sure when that happens that it won't be over, but maybe the Lord will even come back before that. But a lot of people who are not even saved yet will ultimately give their heart to Christ and be discipled in our church and pastor campuses someday. People who are lost right now, people who are smoking pot right now, they're gonna give their heart to Christ, come in, stop liking cats, and then they're gonna fall in love with God. And we're gonna disciple them, and they're gonna help reach the city that God lays on their heart. What? So right here in this room, we established our values, our convictions, and man, we got to know one another, dreaming about our vision. But we started this whole thing, and for a second, I just want to brag about the Conway campus. I want to brag about Bobby. Thank you, Bobby, for your leadership. I get to be a part of the Conway campus. I live in Conway. Everything that we do through the years as we go toward 50 campuses, we cannot forget Conway started it. In fact, it was after 6 months, Conway then started the Little Rock campus and then many other campuses. Why? I think it's because you never forgot what we talked about here. So all of New Life Church, from every campus, we want to say thank you to the Conway campus for starting this journey and holding true to this journey. It's been fascinating to watch. God bless you, Conway campus.
All right, Conway campus, give yourself a hand. Come on. All you cat lovers out there, come on. Let's hear it. All right. How many of you love the genuineness of Pastor Rick, that he can be real? Well, you know, he wrote a book called Be Real. And for those of us who know him pretty well, we didn't need the first 2 minutes of that video because we know he's not a crier. You know, but for some, I think he did it because there's always new people walking in. The last thing he would ever want anyone to think is that we manipulate people with emotion. That never happens, okay? So what I want to do today, this is Vision Weekend, I want to start with a scripture that talks about the values of our church, what the foundational values are in our church. And it's 1 Timothy. I'm going to be talking out of Paul's letters to Timothy. And it says, the purpose of my instruction is that all believers would be filled with what? Love that comes from a pure heart, a clear conscience, and a genuine faith. And then it says, but some people have missed this whole point. Love. That's the whole reason we do what we do. From a pure heart, a clear conscience, and a genuine faith. This is the heart of Pastor Rick, and these are the values we live by. For almost 18 years, he's been genuine. He's been transparent. How many of you ever heard him say something you were surprised that he said from the pulpit? And he'll say anything as long as he thinks it's going to help somebody. But he's pushy about one thing. And he's made us all kind of pushy about one thing. And that is, you know, that we'll reach the next person who needs Christ. We'll go after a family, the next family that needs a miracle just to survive. And there's been plenty of those. The next person, I've been this person, the next loved one who needs someone to share their grief. Being there for them. I'm just telling you, this is, I just want to talk about some specifics today on Vision Weekend. Last week, Pastor Rick was here, he talked on tithing. And, you know, it was really great. I believe, as my age, I've been tithing for a long time, and I believe it's maybe the one thing that transforms your entire financial life is when you get behind obeying God in the tithe. But there's an elephant in the room when you talk about it. You can feel the tension in the air. And the tension in the air most of the time has to do with debt. We are enslaved because of debt sometimes. We talked about this and we prayed about this last week. We buy things that we don't even want, need, with money that we don't have to impress people that we don't even like. So we do that, you know. But it's hard to run a race when you're tied and dragging a boulder behind you. You just can't do it. You can't go anywhere. So we talk about money because we do want to be genuine. We genuinely want you to be free from the love of money. We genuinely want you to be free in your financial lives. Pastor Rick said last week, even if you are enslaved with debt, even if you are having difficulty and you can't do a whole tithe, do something. God says, test me in this, try me in this, and just see if I won't open a window for you. Let me do something for you. Last week, Darren sent out to all the pastors a study that talked about charitable giving. It was a study that wasn't written by a Christian organization, but it talked about the largest percent increase in charitable giving was giving to animals, okay? Believe that or not. I mean, some of us read a long study. I didn't know Darren could read that much, but he did. And so I love animals. Anybody that knows me knows I have a dog named Baylor. I love him probably a little too much. You know, I talk about him a little bit. And but when I die, Jesus is not going to turn and look to me and go, Bobby, my dog was hungry and you fed him. My dog was nappy and you brushed him. No, Jesus is going to say, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. But Lord, when did we see you hungry, thirsty, naked? He goes, when you did it to the least of these. The least person, the least deserving person, the least strong person, the least able person, the least healthy person. Look, how many of you would admit that before you knew Christ, you were the least, and you needed Jesus to have somebody reach out to the least, which was you at that moment? You know, the study was like I said, not a Christian study. It wasn't biased toward Christianity, but one of the stats that it said was that 8 out of 10 people who give a true tithe have 0 credit card debt. That's an amazing stat. Now, it could be that only rich people tithe, so they don't have debt. Or it could be that God blesses those who tithe, and they watch their finances, and he helps them, and they have no debt. So when I was praying today, I was just thinking about Paul's letters to Timothy. I just want to share a couple of little thoughts with you, and I want to get into showing you some what we're going to do. But there's a verse that we often quote if you ever talk about training or discipleship. You know the word discipleship if you become a Christian. It's 2 Timothy 2:1-2. It says, you then, my son, Paul's talking to his son Timothy, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that you've heard me say, things you've heard me say, in the presence of many witnesses, Timothy, I want you to entrust them to reliable people, and they'll be qualified to teach others also. And so Paul met Timothy when he was just 16 years old on a missionary journey, and he took Timothy with him, and he began training him, pouring into his life, and giving him opportunity to serve, and he ultimately became a pastor. Now, I graduated high school many, many years ago with a whopping 2.1 GPA, everybody. I just want you to know, and I didn't know where I was going to make my first million, so I had to figure that out. I didn't even know where I was going to go to college. I didn't even think LSU probably wouldn't even take me, you know, so I didn't know what was going to happen. So I had my pastor friend, Dr. Malilly, was on the Regents at Oral Roberts University, and he begged, pleaded, twisted arms, and I think threatened somebody so that I could get in. And I showed up at ORU, and I had a nice big afro haircut, and I was about all of 135, 140 pounds, looked like a walking Q-tip, okay? And so, now it was pretty terrible, and I played guitar, so it looked like Godspell, you know, the old thing. And so my hair would just bounce. And so anyway, I was putting up my stuff, and somebody said, hey, look, when you get your stuff, grab your guitar and come out to the courtyard. We're going to do some music. So I went out there and started playing the guitar and gathered a big old crowd, and all of a sudden, it was an opportunity for me. I joined the worship team at ORU for the student service. I became, in my sophomore year, I was a chaplain on the floor of my dorm. The next year, I was a chaplain advisor, like going up in leadership. Come on, everybody. And then after that, my roommate and I were directors. We were the student directors over the student worship service at Oral Roberts University with about 1,200 people in the cafeteria singing our brains out, just loving God. It was an amazing time. And look, there was a picture circulating in a 1977 reunion that had me all real skinny with a little mustache and with a guitar. And I tell you, for 3 days, I couldn't find it at all, but I did bring you a gift here. How about this? I brought you a little gift here. How about that? All right? Okay. Woo, okay. Nobody's going to listen to a word I say now. Okay, that's enough. All right, woo. That's why we don't call them the good old days, right? But look, those years changed my life because somebody gave me an opportunity. It made me believe that I could become something that the world was telling me I couldn't become. All I needed was somebody to believe in me. And look, church, we have to pass the baton to the next generation. I'm already older. I look forward to this. This really fires me up. But what are we going to pass on? We pass the values that Rick talked about. We pass love. We pass a genuine faith, clear conscience. Look, part of our vision here is to be debt-free. so that when we pass the baton, that they will not be limited, and you guys will not be limited in ministry that we can accomplish right here in Arkansas. I'm just telling you guys, an organization that does not invest in the young people is an organization that's going to die, even if it's a church. How many of you have ever been to a church that didn't have any young people to it because we didn't like them doing, don't make too much noise, don't dress that way, don't do this? No, we want a church that's vibrant, that we can invest in young people. We are attracting young people. Look around you. Now, Saturday night service, maybe not so much. But here, we're doing a good job. But we have a responsibility. We have an opportunity to do something with those of you who are coming here. If you're young and you're listening here today, I just want to give you one really short piece of advice from an old guy, and that would be just to find mentors in your life. You know, 2 Timothy chapter 1, again, it says, Paul's talking to Timothy, and he says this, hold on to the pattern of wholesome teaching that you learned from me, a pattern shaped by the faith and love that you have in Christ. I was at a life group, and they asked me, well, are there ever times that our church has young people and old people mingle together, and the old people are teaching young people or whatever, vice versa? And I said, well, you know, we probably could do a little better with that, but in New Breed, you'll find that in the men's ministry at 6 o'clock in the morning. So in Reengage, you'll find that, and in some life groups, you'll find that. But I'm going to just say this. I've done some reading. There's a book, As Iron Sharpens Iron. It's an older book, and it talks about mentors and proteges. And what it says, and this is an important thing, it's not the job of the older person to find a younger person and say, hey, I want to be your mentor. That would scare half of you away. Say, get away, you creep, you know. But it's the job of the younger person to find something in an older person that they want to learn. It's your job to be the aggressor. It's your job to knock on the door. And it's your job to learn if you want to learn something. It doesn't mean that you have to have a long-term, like, bondage to a person. But it just means that they have something that they can teach you. Like, some people come to me when they want to talk about business. Ideas, creativity in business and finances. People go to Rebecca Shatzwell to learn how to study the Word better. People go to Jim and Cindy Stockdale, how do I have a better marriage? All around here, in New Breed, we've got leaders. People go to them and just say, how do I become a better man, a better husband? But this is Vision Weekend, and what I want to do now is just celebrate the Conway campus. Those many of you have been here a long time. This is the central hub of everything that New Life Church does. It's the center of creativity, the center of ideas, the center of even buildings. If you look at it, people are copying our foyer right now in GLR. It's the center for children, for students. It's for worship and prayer, Conway, missions, leadership. Community. How do we reach out to the community that has need? Training other pastors. We bring them right here to the Conway campus. Pastors all over the country and all over the world come here. Nothing happens in this state that doesn't start here first. And that represents an opportunity for those of you sitting in this room. In the past 12 months, I don't know if you remember about a year ago, we were having this weekend, and we talked about the foyer was, remember when the foyer was cut off and under construction? We said, hey, we're going to build you a nice foyer. And you're like, yeah, whatever. Let's get to it. But we did. People after this service are hanging out longer. They're eating food. They're visiting together. During the week, business people are having meetings. People are showing up and just hanging out. We have an outdoor meeting area, this gathering space. It's really good. And people are actually reserved to get married out there a couple times. Maybe I'll do it one day. You never know. I came up to church yesterday. People are hanging out. I had an older couple, the Glovers, out there having a romantic conversation right under the outdoor gathering. Either that or an argument. I'm not sure. But look, our coffee shop is amazing. We got better coffee than the S word down the street here. Sorry about that. We promised We promised that we were going to create a lot of spaces to hang out, and I think we've actually over-delivered on our promise, even though all the money has not come in. We've done it. And now I want to talk about the next generation. I got some news, Tyler Tarver, that I'm about to give. Right? You ready? You want to hear it? Okay. It's a very, very high probability, guys, that we're going to have a 4-year accredited college here in the fall of 2019. Come on, somebody. I'm telling you, I can't say that much more, like what's going to be offered. I can't say that there's going to be a business degree. I can't say there's going to be any education. I don't even know if it's true or not. But if you want to know something, text college to 88,000, and Tyler Tarver will answer all your questions. But listen, what we want to do, our students, many of them are graduating with enough degrees, with enough college credits, that they only could stay in our 2-year degree 1 year. So they're coming here for 1 year or 2 years, and they hate to leave because then they have to start all over. And now we're going to have a 4-year accredited college where they don't have to leave. And so because of this, we want to look at 2 projects, one for now and maybe one for later. And that is, last year we also showed a picture of what looked like an apartment building. Do you remember that last year? And so it was like, it had housing for like 48 people in apartments, and then underneath was classroom space and so forth. Now, we looked at that, and the building was going to be, you know, a certain amount of money, but what we've decided is that to bite off that one big building at one time is going to take longer than we could take. So what we've decided to do is to do the exact same thing, but do it in phases where we do the housing first, and we did the student building second, so that when students want to come here for a 4-year college and they leave home for the first time, they'll have a safe place right on our campus to stay, a brand new place to stay. So, you know, the building on the bottom floor of that apartment, quote unquote, complex, it was a beautiful building, I'm just going to tell you. But it was only 8,000 square feet and it had limited ceiling space. For the same roughly amount of money, we'll build a separate building that's going to be 15,000 square feet. It'll have a 500-seat auditorium for the student ministries that are growing, that are outgrowing the chapel, for Elevation that's outgrowing the chapel, for weddings, for funerals, for all these things, for our church, and also for the college that's going to need it as well. There'll be classrooms, labs, everything, and we will not have to scrimp and do without. We would already have outgrown 8,000 square feet. Let me show you a picture of just a concept of what we're looking at for that building. This would be right in the lot adjacent to us where the gravel is, right? Not bad, huh? Come on, somebody. Okay? Almost as nice. There you go. Almost as nice as the picture of me with the afro, okay? All right. So, look, that building is what we're going to do second. We don't even have a timetable for it. We'll build it when the money comes in, and it's going to be somewhere in today's money because construction costs are changing. Right now, it's about $2.2 million, and we're not really raising money for that just today. But if you want to write $2.2 million, we will take it. We will get close to it. We'll communicate well with it. But now we want to begin the student housing building. And the way we're going to do it is not to do one big unit, but 6 smaller units that are duplex-like in size so that we can build one at a time as we need them and not go way out on a limb to do it. It's amazing. And look at the picture of this. How about that, y'all? Come on. That's a pretty good. All right. Here's the thing. Here's what we want to do. We want to start with 6 of those houses, 48 people. There'll be large rooms. There'll actually be larger rooms than what would have been in the apartment. And so we'll have 2 people per room and 4 people per side, and we'll do 6 of them, 48 people. And they will actually make a little bit of money to help pay for the student building once we start to do it. We don't know exactly how much, but it's a significant amount of money. But we can continue to build those until we reach, I think we'll have enough land to do maybe 144 students in those kind of buildings. So one day, okay? So here's what we're going to do. We're not asking to raise all the money to do that. That project's going to be a $1.2 something, $1.1 or $2 million. Again, it's a moving target, but we think that's where we're landing with everything. And all we want to do today is that because it's an income-producing property, all we want to do is get our down payment, our furniture, our internet, our desks, our landscape, and maybe a recreational space. And all that included is going to be something about $400,000 to $450,000. Now, we have 3,000 to 3,500 people on an average weekend, sometimes more, that come to this campus. And you can just imagine that a little bit of help by people will make a lot of difference. It'll go a long way. So Pastor Rick always uses the example, I'm going to wind it down here. He uses the examples that when we don't rent the vision, we don't rent the church, that not the buildings, I mean, we own our church. We are family, and this is our house, and we own this house, and we act like we own this house, because if you own something, you're going to care for it, you're going to pray for it, you're going to work for it, you're going to sacrifice for it. Some of us might even die for it. We've laid down our lives to do this. You know, at that same life group that I went to, I was asked, okay, this is a weird question for me. What is the criteria of hiring somebody at New Life Church? What do you look for when you want to hire somebody at New Life Church? And I thought, that's an interesting question, but before I could even think about it, the word came out of my mouth, sacrifice. Because I think about the sacrifice that the Bezets made, leaving a comfortable life, a great ministry job, and one of the most powerful churches in America to come here and do something that they didn't know what the result was going to be. It was scary. It was a sacrifice. Even financially, it was quite a sacrifice. I think of the DeLons who lived off of their savings and raised support because our church was too young to take on another salary. They sacrificed. Anybody who has come on staff has gone through an element of sacrifice, and that is the DNA of our church, if you want to know how to get involved here. I remember Darren and I used to drive up here on the weekends. He would come every weekend. I'd come about every other weekend, and we would come here on a Friday or Thursday or Friday and leave on a Sunday, make it through the church. And I remember one time, it was after I'd sold my business, I'd got a check, my last bonus check from selling my company. It was a nice check. And I was driving up here and I realized, I'm going to tithe to New Life Church. It'd been a church for a couple of months. And I'm going to tithe to New Life Church because even though my family did not live here, I felt like it was my church. And I remember going to that house that Rick was in, and he had a little, Michelle, you'll remember, his office was a garage storage room with a window unit in it. And he had a little couch in there and a desk, and you had about this much space in between. And I remember going there and just saying, Pastor Rick, I just want to tithe. And I remember, he didn't cry. But he did kind of like take it and say, it's just so encouraging because now I think we're going to make it. Not because the check was that big, but because God is that faithful. I think about you guys. I think about how you serve and you support the vision and the values of our church and people who need Jesus. I think about volunteer leaders who serve in our kids' areas. And God, if there's a place that you can serve that has any greater meaning in our church, I don't know where it is. Successful business people who lead life groups or greet in the foyer. And widows, I can name widows, many of them, who give and support the ministry of our church as we try to reach and try to perform the Great Commission. Look, this is why we have this card here. We're not coercing anybody to do anything except be a part of the family. Last week we talked about the tithe, and some of you filled out where it says, my tithe, yeah, I commit. And it's my first time, and they handed it in. But this week, I want to talk about providing a place so that we can help pass the baton to the next generation of our church, our school, vision, values, love, genuineness, sincerity. How many of you would like to see this last for 100 years right here in Arkansas because we've handed it on correctly? You can take this card if it's on your heart, and a little bit makes a big difference. Some of you could write a check for the whole thing, and I know, but some of you could do $50 a month. Some of you could do $100 a month, and you could just write it on there and fill this out. You can pray about it, or you can do it right now.